So the theme that we've been unpacking in our brief time together this Christmas season is the enormity of Christmas. And the reason we're looking at the enormity of Christmas is sometimes that Christmas can seem or become. Sometimes the nativity can seem just normal. Sometimes the festivities just get a bit too familiar. And yeah, we sort of just get through all of the busyness and enormity of Christmas with going here and going there and presents and food and wishing we hadn't eaten so much food and then trying to get to holidays and then not being able to get to holidays or watching cricket or whatever it happens to be that we're in. And it's sort of the enormity of Christmas can get lost. And I'm hoping that things that we've talked about last week and we're going to talk about today can help us rediscover or discover for the first time or in fresh ways the enormity of Christmas. Why is Christmas so enormous? And last week we looked at, well, we needed to think about the enormity of God. And before we could think about the enormity of God, we had to think about whether there was a God or not. And we looked briefly at the, we asked ourselves a question, why is there stuff? Like, why is there a universe as opposed to no universe? And why is this universe so rationally intelligible that we can make observations and predictions about things that happen in galaxies far, far away? And if outside all of the Christmas lights and noise and activities, we can then begin to ponder those things, those will lead us along with other questions like causality and other things to think about, yes, there probably is some sort of God. And last week we looked at a series of Hubble telescope pictures. I'm going to ask Chris to put up the first one of those. This is a very famous Hubble telescope picture called The Pillars of Creation. It's of a gas nebula. There are stars being born in that. And then the next one we put up was a photo of 10,000 galaxies. And our galaxy has, they reckon, about 100 billion stars in it. And they reckon there are about a trillion galaxies in the known universe. The universe is mind-blowingly enormous. It is almost incomprehensible that there is this vast thing called the universe. But that leads us to the conclusion that it, because there is something rather than nothing, because it's rationally intelligible, because we see causality and a few other things, we can come to the conclusion there must be a God. And the size of the universe and the enormity of the universe and the design of the universe points to a few things, that whatever this God must be powerful. And this God must be intelligent and have agency. And you can get to that point just by doing thought experiments and by observing the world and the universe around us. And that process of getting to understanding about what God might be like by observing the world around us is called natural theology. And the good thing about revisiting that this Christmas time is that we can rediscover the enormity of God. Sometimes we're so used to talking about God being close to us and communicating with us and loving us that we forget the enormity. God is so much other than us. God is transcendent in ways that we can't fully comprehend. But if we're going to rediscover or discover the enormity of Christmas, we have to rediscover the enormity of God. And natural theology can get us to that point. But then the next natural question is, well, what sort of God? This God might be big and powerful, but what sort of God is it? Like, does this God couldn't care about people? Or not, is this God a God who is capricious or vindictive or ugly or evil? Is this God good or bad, loving or kind or absent or present? Well, the processes of physics and reflecting on the natural world can't get us that far. We have to turn to some other source of knowledge. And it's a bit like, say you moved into a new neighbourhood, It was maybe a new housing estate, and you were in a brand new house, and there's some other houses near you, and then there was down the end of the street, there was this mansion. And you could observe from time to time cars going in and out of the triple garage. You could, from time to time, you could see lights coming on in the house at different times. And you might surmise from that evidence that you observed in the physical world that there was a person that lived there. But you wouldn't have any idea about whether they were a nice person or a nasty person, whether they were educated or not educated, whether they were male or female, whether they were old or young. You wouldn't have any idea about that. But you might then go to your next door neighbour who's been in the estate longer than you, and they might say, hey, yeah, I know Fred. He lives in that house. He's been here since the estate opened. He's a great guy. You know, we went around there for a party the other day. And you begin to learn some more about this person that you surmise lived in the house because of other people's historic interactions with that person. Now, if this enormous God that's responsible for this universe doesn't speak to people or is not interested, well, then we wouldn't expect there to be any record of any interactions. But in human history, there's lots of records of people interacting with God. And that, in fact, in large degree, is what the Bible is. It's a collection of stories of how people have interacted with God. Sometimes, you know, people portray the Bible as a rule book or a guide for life or whatever else, and it has those things in it, but fundamentally, it is a collection over 15 years of people in different places at different times in different languages writing down and the important interactions that they had with God. And that can begin to help us understand what sort of God this is. We know this God's enormous and powerful and intelligent, but then from the Bible we can also begin to understand that this God is a God who makes covenants and agreements and keeps them, a God who rescues people, who cares about the lowly and the little person, who speaks to people, who saves people, who is loving, who is just and holy and deals with things that go wrong. And we get from the enormity of an unknown God to a loving and personal God by investigating the history of God's interaction with people. It's a different way of knowing stuff than just doing thought experiments and observations of the physical universe. But it's the way we know really important stuff, like how we know what friends are like or what it's like to work in certain places or what it's like to go and visit certain people. We learn from the interactions and that we have and that other people have had. And the Bible is full of these. And Christmas is about one of the most stunning interactions between God and humanity that there has ever been. The birth of Jesus. Now, whether you think he's the Son of God or not, there is no doubt that the birth of this baby has had an outsized influence on human history. The fact that we are singing songs about it 2,000 years ago on the other side of the world in a totally different language is to that. But again, we can just sort of, we're so familiar with it that we can sometimes lose the enormity of it. And I'm just going to read some verses from reflections that people that lived during and after the time of Jesus had about this. And the first one, we're not exactly sure who wrote it. We think it might have been Paul. Maybe it was Apollos. But it says this in Hebrews chapter 1. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets, see? We learn about what God's like through God's interactions with people and the record of it. At many times and in various ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through whom also he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being. That's amazing. this interaction of between God and humans shows us in a baby, shows us in a person, in some mysterious way, what God is like. And that's one of the amazing truths of Christmas, is that the person of Jesus shows us what God is like. At the beginning of John's Gospel, it says these words. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. And it says in verse 14, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. The Word is probably more literally translated, tabernacled among us. And so John here, reflecting on the life of Jesus that he had experienced, he then made connections between the life of Jesus being the presence of God with people to just the way the tabernacle was the presence of God in the midst of the Israelites as they travelled around in the wilderness and then later in the temple. And so this revelation of God's interaction through Jesus at Christmas, first of all, shows us what God is like, and secondly, teaches us that God stays with us. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. God is not distant and disconnected. God is close and connected. And then back to another letter that Paul wrote, and he's probably quoting a poem that was maybe composed by someone else, but was certainly used in the early Christian churches, saying this about Christ, who being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. So we've seen that the person of Jesus shows us what God is like. The birth of Jesus shows us that God stays with us. But the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus shows that Jesus serves us and saves us. This God somehow became a human. You know, sometimes we talk about when we want to help a child, we get down to their level. Now, and if those of you who are parents have probably got down to a child's level and helped them with something, right? There was a missionary who went to connect with some tribes in Central America and try to talk about this place, understanding what God had done. He talked about, well, it was like a human being became an ant so he could communicate with the ants. And that's a bit more of a dramatic shift, isn't it, than just getting down to your level. There was a famous hymn writer, Charles Wesley, and he wrote a song which is a Christmas carol, or Christmas hymn. It isn't often sung these days, but it's Let Earth and Heaven Combine. And this is the first verse. Let earth and heaven combine, angels and men agree, to praise in songs divine the incarnate deity. And these are the phrases I want us to grasp today as we consider the enormity of Christmas. Our God contracted to a span, incomprehensibly made man. You see, you need to have a humongous God to really grasp the incomprehensibility of that God becoming a human. And that's why we, this Christmas season, have been having this this image up on the screen, this backdrop. It's a combination of two things. It's a combination of the stars in the universe, which speak of the enormity of God. and the manger with a baby in it. Talks about God contracted to a span, incomprehensibly made man. So this Christmas, find some time to go outside and look at the sky, look at the stars, look at the universe, be reminded of the enormity of it and then the enormity of God. And then look at a nativity. And think about the enormous God behind this enormous universe becoming a child. So that we can know what this God is like, so that we can know that this God is with us, so that we know that this God serves and saves us. And then there are three things that I want to encourage us to do. The first, just like Mary, is to ponder it or to wonder. Because I've got words beginning with W. Not the World Wide Web, but the first word is wonder. We really need to just spend some time wondering about it and letting ourselves be interacting with, like we know intellectually what it is, but experientially, it's hard to grasp, right? We can sort of simplify it down, but we need to ponder the mystery. Because we can, humans, can understand a lot about the universe, and we can understand about the incarnation, but we need to get to the point where we also let it become mysterious to us again. So we need to wonder. And that wonder should lead to worship. In song, in prayer, in service, in whatever way, but honouring this God, praising this God, lifting up this God, this enormous God who has incomprehensibly made man. So wonder and worship. And the third one is walk in the light of its truth. And not just for Christmas, but for the days after Christmas as well. The days and weeks and months after Christmas as well. You may well have heard the story about the Christmas truce. It's a story of what happened in the horrors of the First World War. The first Christmas of the First World War. All up and down the line, the front between the opposing forces, unorganized by generals, but organized by the men on the ground, Christmas truces broke out. The fighting stopped. They went and exchanged. They even sung carols together. We talk about Christmas being a time of peace and joy, and here was a great example of peace coming into the midst of the most terrible conflicted circumstance because of Jesus, who was given prominence rather than the generals who were prosecuting the war. The trouble was, it was only temporary, and the next day they went back to their trenches and started firing at each other again. And then the next year, the generals clamped down on it because they didn't want any of this. But can you just imagine if instead of them clamping down on it, the people said, no, we want to walk in the light of Christmas, not just on Christmas Day, but Boxing Day and the day after it and the day after that. And we're going to sing carols with our former enemies and we're going to give gifts to each other. We're going to stop shooting at each other. Imagine if they had decided to walk in the light of Christmas, not just for a day, but for a year. You see, and that's the opportunity before us as well, to live our lives, to walk our lives in the light of Christmas every day. That there is a God who is enormous, who somehow became human so that we can comprehend this God and know this God and receive service and salvation and wisdom and grace and peace and joy from this God. And that would be amazing. The enormity of Christmas, the reality of Christmas, not just for a moment, not just for an hour, not just for a day, but for a lifetime. Wonder, worship, and walk in response to the enormity of Christmas. Let's pray. God, we like to try and just get things in bite-sized, manageable pieces. And God, we confess that sometimes we have tried to deal with you and make you into bite-sized and manageable pieces. But you aren't that, God. You aren't bite-sized. You're enormous. And then you did an enormous thing in becoming a human. Help us to wonder. Help us to worship. Help us to walk in the light of the truth of God contracted to a span, incomprehensibly made man. Amen.